Dr. Dana Potter, chief resident at Johns Hopkins, is tutoring Dr. Gregory Snyder, an intern there.
Hello, Greg. Are you ready for a new case?
Yes. Thanks again for helping me. It's much appreciated.
Not at all. It helps me review for my boards, too. So today we're talking about Mrs. Williams, a 41-year-old female. She was admitted to the hospital for high fever and chills. What would you ask the patient?
That's all she's complaining of?
At that time, yes.
I would ask her if she's pregnant.
Okay, fine. She's not pregnant. What else?
Well, when you say high fever and chills, I'm thinking infections, so I would ask if she had any recent surgery or a wound that might have gotten infected.
Nothing of the sort.
Okay, then I'd press her to know if she has any more symptoms, like pain anywhere, or any sign of upper respiratory distress, or any GI problems.
Then she would tell you that she had abdominal cramping 5 days prior to presentation, and in the previous 3 days she had nausea and vomiting.
Okay. So I'd ask her if anyone she knows has the same symptoms, and if there's a chance she ate something funky just before the onset of her symptoms.
She lives alone and hadn't gone to work as she had been on vacation for a month, so she hadn't really seen anybody. Nobody she knew had the same symptoms. She doesn't remember eating anything out of the ordinary before the onset of symptoms.
Wait, she was on vacation? Had she had contact with animals or gone traveling?
There you go. Yep. She had returned from a one-month-long stay in Uganda, 3 days before presentation, but she reported no contact with animals.
Okay. And was she from the U.S. originally?
Yes. Why do you ask?
Because it's my understanding that some people in some parts of the world have natural resistance to tropical diseases, like waterborne diseases in India, I think. So I thought it might be useful information.
Okay, interesting. Well, she's a native-born U.S. citizen, but she has been regularly visiting Uganda for several years for 2 to 4 week-long stays as a Christian missionary.
All right, and when had her symptoms begun?
Finally. You really should have asked that a little earlier on, but they started 5 days before presentation. She then became ill with fever, malaise, and abdominal cramping. That was 2 days before departing Uganda. She remained ill on her airplane flight back to the United States. In the 3 days prior to seeking care upon arrival in the U.S., she had continued episodes of high fever with chills and had nausea and vomiting. Now that you have all her symptoms, would you have had any more questions for the patient?
Well, I would have liked to know if she had taken any kind of prophylaxis before going to Uganda.
No, she hadn't. On some prior visits, she had taken antimalarial prophylaxis. On more recent visits, including this one, she had not taken prophylaxis in part because of the expense. Which drug would that be? Antimalarial prophylaxis and expensive?
It must have been Malarone. But there are others that are cheaper. Did she get protection from mosquitoes at all?
She did use some mosquito net at night and was unaware of any mosquito bites. She didn't want to use Larium, which is cheaper, you're right, because she'd had side effects with it. Dizziness and violent headaches.
Okay. And did she have any significant underlying medical illnesses?
No, her history was quite unremarkable. Nothing useful to the case. What would have been your next step?
I would get some tests done, like blood work and a blood smear for malaria for sure.
At the time of her emergency room presentation, laboratory evaluation included WBC at 3.4, hemoglobin at 13.9, platelets at 17, AST at 90, ALT at 118, bilirubin at 4.6, bicarb 26, creatinine at 0.6, INR was 1.1, PTT 30, fibrinogen levels were at 478, and D-dimer was over 5,250. A blood smear for malaria was positive, showing a high parasitemia with 15%. Chest x-ray did not show significant abnormality.
So that's almost too easy. We just put her on anti-malarial therapy.
Yeah, but within the first day of hospitalization, she became progressively obtunded. What will you do then?
Not sure. Would you take her off the drugs?
Well, you do have to treat the infection, Greg. You cannot just stop treating the patient. In this case, it's not a reaction to the medication. It's a sign of complication. So Mrs. Williams was transferred to a tertiary care facility for potential exchange transfusion and continued care, of course.
But how could I have known? Nobody ever has malaria in the States.
Well, yes, malaria is rare in the U.S., so few residents know about it in depth, which means now you have a leg up as compared to the others. Now, do you have any idea what the clinical features of complicated malaria are, as defined by the WHO?
That's a tough one. I did study it, but I'm not sure I'll find them all. So, there's impaired consciousness, prostration, clinical jaundice, plus evidence of other vital organ dysfunction, Multiple convulsions?
That's correct. More than 2 episodes in 24 hours.
Okay, let's see. There's circulatory collapse or shock, and I'm not sure what else.
That's quite good. You're just missing abnormal spontaneous bleeding, failure to feed, and respiratory distress. How many do you need to have when there's no other obvious cause of symptoms to classify malaria as being a severe case?
At least 2.
At least 1. Now, which species of parasite is more likely to cause severe malaria?
Oh, I do know that. I think it's Plasmodium falciparum or P. knowlesi.
Yes, very nice. And in this case, the patient had severe cerebral malaria due to Plasmodium falciparum.
I think I remember that those suffering from severe malaria should be treated with parenteral therapy.
Now, my big question. What would be the most effective pharmaceutical therapy in this case of severe malaria?
Quinidine gluconate?
Well, partly yes, but not only. But this was a trick question. Quinidine gluconate is no longer considered the preferred treatment for severe falciparum malaria. It's less potent as an antimalarial and has more significant side effects such as cardiotoxicity, hypotension, and hypoglycemia. Then, any idea what would be preferable?
Nope, sorry.
Artesunate.
But I thought I learned that the only current commercially available IV antimalarial was quinidine gluconate.
Yeah, you're right.
So what's artesunate?
It's an artemisinin, which is derived from sweet wormwood, qinghao.
Never heard of it.
Well, the active ingredient of qinghao, known as artemisinin, was isolated by Chinese scientists in 1971, so it's quite recent. Its higher efficacy in treatment may be due in part to its activity against more ringworm stages than the quinoline antimalarials like quinine, quinidine, and mefloquine.
Right, but if it's not available in the US, how do we get it for the patient?
There's an investigational new drug protocol at the CDC. Its eventual commercial availability is being sought, which to some degree is a financial issue, as the costs of drug development and approval are very substantial, particularly when there are only about 1,500 cases of malaria of all types reported in the US annually.
Okay, so you discontinue the antimalarial and give some artesunate.
No, unfortunately, partial resistance has already developed to artemisinins in some regions of the world. The WHO recommends these compounds always be used in combination with other antimalarials to try to avoid the development of further resistance.
So what was Mrs. Williams' treatment?
She received IV quinidine locally and then artesunate when it was acquired at the tertiary care facility. She appeared to quickly benefit from the artesunate and then recovered without severe neurologic sequelae.
Okay. I had no idea that drug existed. Thanks, Dana.
You're welcome. This one was great to research.